Hi, Ken. Hiya. I did a pretty picture. That's it on the visuals, right? That's it on AV. It's all A, no V, except for
the bottom.
Oh, something's happened.
You clicked it.
That was Uranus conjunction today. It's on my descendant. Yes, that's it.
That's what's nice. It's
this stuff. Yeah, technology me. Anyway, morning. Hi. yes. Worry is a misuse of imagination. And astrology, on the other hand, I think is a near perfect use of imagination. We've got this amazing discipline, this practice of applied imagination. And it is as limitless and as renewing and as full of potential as imagination can be. Maybe sometimes we need reminding not to enclose ourselves or our clients in too small a container. Here's poet David White on difficult times. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. It's time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There, you can be sure you're not beyond love. Actually, this talk has got quite a lot of stuff like that in it, and not much actual astrology, but it has been written with a mind turned towards people having difficult times, and thinking particularly at the moment of Martin over in Canada.
Martin.
Originally, of course, I just thought, oh God, what am I going to say, you know? And I took refuge in the title. I thought I'd break it down. I was lucky enough to have Sue Tompkins as my very first astrology teacher right at the end of the 80s. And I hadn't even heard of the faculty then. This was adult ed classes, and I've got her to thank for my love of the subject and for the diploma that I went on to study for. Anyway, I can remember that whenever Sue wanted to examine something, she used to oil the wheels of thought with a bit of definition and sort of pare it back to the etymology. And here we go, a tool for navigating difficult times. I'm trying really hard now to forget Lindsay saying that she hated it when people talked about astrology as a tool last year. Anyway, tool means instrument or implement. And it comes from the old English tawin, which means prepare. So a tool is something that helps us prepare ourselves. And preparation is key to all sorts of things, obviously. The whole process of identifying and laying the groundwork and finding what we might need. So it's about being ready and able to make the best of a situation. Dib-dib-dib, which I learnt is actually D-Y-B, you know. Dib-dib-dib is what the scouts say, and their motto is be prepared. And dib-dib-dib actually stands for do your best. And the answer is we'll dob-dob-dob, which means we'll do our best. And I think that's a pretty good principle to begin with. Anyway, navigate comes from navis, ship, and agere, to drive or to steer. And I think the metaphor of an ocean voyage is a very good one for tough times. There's an Australian female psychologist called Robin Vickers-Willis, and she likens the midlife journey to a long sea voyage, migrants leaving their home country for a new land. Midlife transits, of course, are quite something. You know, you've got the early adopter Pluto square in recent times, though not forever, but always the Neptune square itself, always the Uranus opposite itself, that stuff at 40, 41, 42, which our first Jupiter opposite itself since our Saturn return, and then finally bringing up the rear Saturn opposite Saturn, around 44. So they're all big deals. And I think the metaphor of the long sea voyage is not a bad one for illuminating a major transition. I chose to call my talk calm seas make poor sailors. And I guess, you know, the core meaning of that proverb is that unless we have stormy times or difficulty or challenge, then we don't develop sufficiently. No, we don't grow into the truest or the best version of ourselves. Difficult, of course, literally means dis, away from, facile, easy. And that makes me think of hard aspects and the idea of the knife and the whetstone and the grit and the oyster and so on. But I was also thinking about difficulty as being comparable to being in training. So you can get to your optimal weight and fitness. If you think of the kind of thing a cycling Olympian endures on a daily basis just to be able to do their best. Passing out, throwing up, exhaustion, agony, learning to love the pain. It's getting them somewhere, their pain, clearly. I think agony can be the ground of a certain creative generativity, and it's a kind of birth. You can see I'm shaking now. There's no birth without pain. And adversity certainly has the capacity to make us become who we could be. It's Saturn, obviously, it's hard, it's heavy, it weighs on us. But it is lead into gold, and it's carbon into diamond, sand into glass, lump of clay into china cup, chickpea into hummus. We need the alchemy. We need to be compressed or melted, spun, fired, boiled, blitzed. History has tons of examples of people undergoing terrible circumstances who do emerge wiser, deeper, stronger, more somehow, grown larger despite being torn apart. These are people who gave themselves to the world through their ordeals and whose lives correspondingly echo beyond their own personal boundaries. Think Anne Frank, Nelson Mandela, Vincent van Gogh, Viktor Frankl, and think numberless unknown and unsung people who have risen to understanding, risen to compassion or to dignity and creative strength despite their suffering or brutalization. So even if we never have to face the very worst that life can throw at us, nevertheless, trying to know ourselves thanks to the patterns in our natal chart and its unfolding, that means we might grow and expand and polish the stone of our existence, maybe enough so it actually sheds some light. And the other thing about hard times is that they're really pretty vital to gratitude and appreciation. If we've only been satisfied or happy, then we have no idea of the full landscape of life and the truth of the world and what it can be. And therefore, we have no way to viscerally understand our blessings. But if we have spent a season in hell, you know, the sweetness of the fresh air when we're up again, the heartbreaking beauty of the blue sky, and the miracle of walking over green grass. I once passed a telephone exchange box in the street in North London, and it had words painted over it, which really struck me. It turns out they were written a long time ago by Kobayashi Issa, and he was born in 1763. This world of ours, standing on the roof of hell, gazing at flowers. That elegant graffiti was around the corner from a friend's house, and her mum died as I was writing this piece. She died on Pisces new moon after a long, hard and very painful month. But as the song goes, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And I think probably we can benefit from practicing, rehearsing what it might be like to have things gone, things that we love, things that we might take for granted. You know, your opposable thumb, your ability to walk, your mates, your partner, your memory. They can all seem a bit more precious if we think about what it might be like not to have them, even if only for a moment. Life is short. And if we could really embrace appreciating it now, then we might lose some of our routine dissatisfaction or some of our everyday misery. You know? Sometimes it does take loss and pain barging in to change our perspective. Most of us don't like change, not really, you know. Most of us don't sign up for having the rug pulled away, you know, even if it does reveal the secret trap door. Especially probably if it reveals the secret trap door, so we don't know what's down there. But however you might feel about change, pretty much nobody wants pain. Yet pain could be thought of as a signal that something needs attention. As someone else put it, pain is fuel we burn for our voyage. Voyage navigation. So this thing about our charts helping us steer, and they do. They help us find a way through. And they can also provide a rudder. Somehow, they're also the map and the compass. They give us this container and framework, and through that they help us get the boundary of things or a sense of it, as well as paradoxically the limitless potential. But as you know, we only have the luxury of contemplating our charts, and we only have the luxury of art, culture, science, all of these wealth of intellectual endeavour and creative output, thanks to the fact that we're not actually running away from being eaten by wild animals, and we're not fleeing a burning house, and we're not being bombed, and we're not being washed away, and any number of other things that would mean you could only focus on trying to survive, and that focuses your perspective right up to one point. But if survival isn't immediately threatened, and there are still loads of people in loads of places where that isn't so, but when it's not threatened, we have the time and space to deal with other things. Hurrah! So I'm going to start with the basics, and I often like to go back to the elements and their simplicity and their profundity. So how can we use this subject of ours? I thought, well, we can approach it in an earthy way. We can employ timing and framework and useful parameters, tangible stuff, practicality. When will this awful time end? Let's see, May. And then it comes back in November. We can approach it through the way of fire, meaning and heart and vision and philosophy. This is a subject centred on symbol making. We can set light to things. We can see possibilities beyond. We can reach towards the intangible for faith or for hope. And of course we can approach it through air. All these lovely maps and words, concepts, our curiosity, our desire to communicate, to make sense of things with our rationality and our discussion, and the usefulness of objectivity and distance perspective. And we can approach through water, through tenderness and compassion and soul, through being connected and aware of vulnerability, through coming together, being alongside other people in silence, and feeling our way through. But whatever you're going to use, whatever skills we've got, sooner or later, if you live in this world, you're initiated into the heartbreak at the heart of things. And that's a line written in 1916 by Wilfred Wilson Gibson, and it ends his short poem, Lament. Martin in Canada alerted me to the relevance of Gibson's astrology, and he just put it very succinctly, Mercury equals Venus equals Chiron equals Neptune. In other words, there's a Mercury-Venus conjunction in Gibson's chart, and they are both sesquiquadrate, the Chiron-Neptune conjunction of the times. His Mercury-Venus is also opposite Saturn in Pisces, which is his only water. And that picture, as the sun in Libra, gives literal voice to the heartbreak in the heart of things. There's no way to be fully alive and not get your heart broken by a parent, a friend, a lover, by your own child, by the awful truth and beauty and random cruelty of life itself. And if you really do seek a path without heartbreak, then it's going to be a long and fruitless search. If the path you steer is always away from pain, you won't really get to live. That's the thing. It's okay to be afraid. We're all afraid. You know? Courage is not about not being afraid. It's about living with heart. It's about putting heart into your life. And encouragement is about sharing wholeheartedness. Wholeheartedness is the secret antidote to exhaustion, to that feeling that you can't go on. Find what you love, or at least reach out to it. Doctors tell us that a disease has three aspects: what it's composed of, the effect it has in a particular patient, and then how the individual diagnosed with it is actually dealing with it, or the effects on them personally. So if we look at difficult times as somehow being inflicted on us, then clearly how we deal with them is as significant as what we're going through. So there are going to be external circumstances over which we have no control, but we do control, or can, how we carry ourselves through them, and if we allow ourselves to be worked upon or changed, made more who we might be. Nobody sitting here, I'm guessing anyway, nobody sitting here has had a life without something like illness or divorce or depression or loss or abuse or bereavement. And when your house has been razed to the ground, and once the fire's been extinguished and you're wading through the soot and the sodden ashes and the mess and the devastation, and it's all been cleaned up, sometime afterwards, maybe weeks, months, years, maybe a lifetime, if we're lucky, we can finally say, I see the shape of something good in this. I see what grew out of it. I see something that could be called beneficial. Like a forest scorched, which grows better, or a seed that bursts open only after the flames have warmed it. New life, a new possibility can be waiting. So this isn't some kind of platitude about looking on the bright side either. It's not a sort of Pollyanna thing. It's not plaster a brave face on it, you know, and smile. It's the fact that everything that's alive has the capacity to falter and to fail. And only things that are alive can die. As humans, we have the gift and the curse of knowing this. More poetry, the peace of wild things. This is by Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. We know that the heart of the chart is the sun. Who are you? Who might you be if you let your heart be broken by this world? Every seed destroys its container. You know what the man said, that your pain is the breaking of the shell that contains your understanding. And grief is certainly the price we pay for love. Pain is, I guess, the price we pay for being alive, for being able to care and to feel and to open ourselves to the possibilities of being human. Our craft of astrology is a gift. It allows us a magical glimpse, a way to live with both heart and heartbreak. And we know it's not just us. We're part of the whole thing. So why not be generous? Why not take risks? Why not give of yourself? Find what counts to you and share it. Give it away. I can pretty much guarantee it will make you happier. Kierkegaard said the most common form of despair is not being who you are. Joseph Campbell, of course, the master on all of this, you know, whatever happens to us, we can find a purpose within it. Our own meaning is the meaning. Being alive is the meaning. Your life is the fruit of your own doing. And the privilege of a lifetime is being who you are. Find the joy, and the joy will burn out pain. And yet, there we are with our own child, endlessly catastrophizing. Oh no, I've got Pluto on my IC, you know, my dad's going to die, my house is going to be destroyed, the ground beneath my feet will be bulldozed, I'll be in hell. Actually, I was telling Sue Fairbrother the other day about seeing a young client who at that time did have Pluto coming up to her IC, and I used the metaphor of the bulldozer and the house, and she went very pale and said that actually the only home she'd ever known was about to be demolished by bulldozers, and she was quite upset about it, so I refrained from punching the air. There's the example in Caroline Case's brilliant book about the client who knows that they're going through Pluto transit and they're thinking about having a clear out, so they start, and part of that clear out is taking a whole load of stuff to the dry cleaners, and they drop it off and they go on with their day, and they're driving back the same day and they notice that the dry cleaners doesn't exist anymore. It's got burnt to the ground, you know? And this good client though apparently gave rise to the reflection, maybe that clear out needs to be a bit more thorough. It's eggs and omelettes, right? Difficult times for the egg. No omelets otherwise. John Moriarty wrote, if nature can handle the destruction and reconstruction of a caterpillar into a butterfly, why shouldn't we surrender and trust that it can handle what is happening to us? Anyway, don't scare people, right? Do not terrorize the native with fear of a harsh judgment or something like that. We ought to know enough not to dump rubbish on our clients. And we do need to remember it about our own charts too. I've got Pluto stationing right on my IC now, and still at the time of speaking I can say I'm loving it, you know. I'm actually feeling very connected to the source. Things around home, yes, stepson, partner son was away for 3 years and then came back and then came to stay with us with his first ever girlfriend, so that was sort of major. And they're drilling like bastards in my tower block every morning, you know, renovating the kitchen. I am more involved with my family than I have been at times in the past, and my mum sold up her place and moved countries and moved in with my sister, which is big. Both my parents are getting very old now. I'm doing a lot of talking with my dad about his funeral. He loves it. That's probably his natal Pluto rising, possibly his moon in Capricorn, exact sextile Mercury Pisces, could be. Anyway, we keep having conversations about him being dead, and he keeps being very much alive, although he never imagined living until he was 80, and a very, very dangerous job, and lots of people die. Here he is. He's got until mid-April, I think 20th of April or something. He hates birthday parties, so you never know. But anyway, I'm a funeral celebrant in my other misunderstood job, and I volunteer with a charity called Down to Earth, which deals with death and dying and bereavement. So sometimes, you know, you might be sitting in a nursing home with someone who's on the way out, or you might be going to visit someone who's 83 and their wife has just died. All of this can easily be understood with Pluto on my IC. Not to mention going through what's called euphemistically the change. When I was thinking about the posh word for difficulty, and I kept encountering adversity, you know, it comes from the same root as adversary or adverse, which means opposing. And as astrologers, we know the secret about opposition, which is that it is a search for integration. a quest to unite seemingly disparate things. Opposites contain the seeds of togetherness, of complementarity. And the opposition is the aspect most connected to relationship and relatedness. So we can say, I stand opposed, but what that actually does is unite us with something. And obviously we've got that whole idea of mirror, you know, and the notion of projection. Adverse literally means facing, turn towards. So what are we facing into, and what do we see in the mirror? The mirror of adversity, according to many great minds, shows our true self. Adversity has ever been considered the state in which a man most easily becomes acquainted with himself, as Samuel Johnson put it, and before him, a long time before him, Horace. Adversity has the effect of eliciting talents which in prosperous circumstances would have lain dormant. And before him, Epicurus. You do not develop courage by being happy in your relationships every day. You develop it by surviving difficult times and challenging adversity. The greater the difficulty, the more glory in surmounting it. Skillful pilots gain their reputation for storms and tempests. But all right, let's say someone's sitting in your living room and they are having a terrible time with life. They are not enjoying the brilliance of existence. They're not enjoying the beauty of the perfection of this extraordinary one-off experience. You know, they're having a rubbish time, they're hurting, and they need gentleness, and they need understanding, and they need to be listened to. They need our assistance and our compassion, and as much truth and comfort and clarity as we can deliver. So don't leap on the chart and try and explain it away. Don't gloss over what they're telling you while you scan your laptop for a bit of evidence. Listen to them, pay attention, look at them, stay with it. Don't make someone's pain into something fascinating or perfect. However apposite their Moon-Pluto transit might be, try and remember it's cruel if you say things without thinking about how they can sound or how they might feel. I've been reading a book called Wave by Sonali Duraniyagala. That's my best try at that. It's her memoir about losing. I mean, it's terrible. I'm laughing now. It's her memoir about the death of her two young boys, her husband and her parents in the tsunami in Sri Lanka. I'm not sure that any amount of astrological consultation would have been equal to that. It's very important that we remember not to astro-rationalise someone's pain. I was once told by a pro-astrologer, who will remain nameless, and this was at a time, a while back now, I was very sad and feeling quite vulnerable about not being able to have children. And he said, your infertility makes perfect sense to me. Imagine. Good for him, eh? You know? It's just as well this was over the phone, right? Because I think I really would have wanted to kill him. Instead, I just closed down. As I recall, I drank my way through the rest of the yada that he had, and basically I just sentenced him to death in my own head. But we mustn't get stuck in some delusion either, that we can help people, you know? It's patronising, it's arrogant, and it's very unhelpful to think we can wave some magic astro wand and make it all better for them, you know? I think what really does or can help people is not pretending to be able to take away their pain, not underestimating what a hard time that they're having, and not doing anything other than listening and reflecting and, you know, just saying, that sounds rough. You know, that can be enough. You can say, that sounds rough. You can't make someone able to have children, and nor can astrology, but you can say, that sounds rough, not, oh, you don't know how lucky you are, my kids kill me, you know, or not, why don't you adopt, or not, you know, haven't you tried IVF, you can't want kids if you haven't tried IVF, not even, this too will pass, even if it's true, right, not a million stupid things, you can just say, that sounds difficult, that sounds rough, no? You've heard what you've been told, and you're reflecting it back, and you're allowing what they feel. Oscar Wilde's beautiful De Profundis was written towards the end of his imprisonment, in the aftermath of Pluto going over his MC. He lost everything. Neptune was transiting conjunct his 10th house Saturn, and it was squaring itself, and Uranus was opposite Uranus, so he was having all of the midlife transits, and then some. De Profundis contains these lines. The final mystery is oneself. When one has weighed the sun in balance and measured the steps of the moon and mapped out the seven heavens star by star, there still remains oneself. Who can calculate the orbit of his own soul? We know, as practitioners, most of us, that the chart has an amazing range and a scope and a depth that can astound and delight and keeps us constantly in love with our craft. Yields endless illumination, that phrase of Charles Carter. And we know, of course, that Neptune transits can herald loss, and Uranus transits can reflect times of great disruption and shock, and Pluto transits can bulldoze our house. But when you're sitting in front of someone who is living this out, don't allow the brilliance of astrology to blind you to their feelings, because it isn't about it making perfect sense to you. If we honour our craft, we use it with sensitivity and respect and care, and we can gently hold up the mirror of astrology and allow our clients to see themselves. Being seen and being heard is rare enough, and finding that there's someone trustworthy who can add a steady hand to the tiller, or at least is willing to sit and talk through with us the route that we're on, with all its potential and possibility, can be very healing. If we're doing our job as well as possible, we can talk about the voyage. Before it starts, there are decisions. What to take, maybe who. What do you leave behind? Then there's the process of saying goodbye, and the voyage itself. Can take you a long time to get to where you want to be. During the trip, you may well be overcome with listlessness. Imagine lying on your bunk as the ocean flows beneath you and disappears in a wake behind, and you don't want to move, and you don't want to get up, and you don't want to do anything. You've had it. And on other days, it's even worse, because there are 10-foot waves, and you're just heaving into a bucket, and you wish you were dead. But sooner or later, the urge comes to get up and go out on deck, if only because you are bored sick of your stupid bunk-ridden self. And then there's the expanse, there's the horizon, the big sky, if you're lucky, the sun on the water, and you smell land ahead. You know that a new home awaits, and you begin to get excited. You begin to imagine how it could be. And eventually, there you are, at the shore, ready to step out. Finish now, you'll be glad to hear, but there will be a final poem. This is Mameen by David White. Be infinitesimal under that sky, a creature even the sailing hawk misses, a wraith among the rocks where the mists part slowly. Recall the way mere mortals are overwhelmed by circumstance, how great reputations dissolve with infirmity, and how you in particular live a hair's breadth away from losing everything you hold dear. Then look back down the path as if seeing your past, and south over the hazy blue coast as if present to a wide future. Remember the way you are all possibilities you can see, and how you live best as an appreciator of horizons, whether you reach them or not. Admit that once you've got up from your chair and opened the door, once you've walked out into the clean air towards that edge and taken the path up high, beyond the ordinary, you have become the privileged and the pilgrim, the one who will tell the story, and the one coming back from the mountain who helped make it.
indeed. That was wonderful. Very reassuring. We've made